Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. All politics is local. That's what they used to say, not anymore, because now all politics is national, even local politics, even school board politics. Now school board elections are about critical race theory, banning books, grooming, rigged elections. Any polarizing issue is now fair game at the open mic during the school board meetings. And a new book takes a look at that. It's called They Came for the Schools, One Town's Fight Over Race and Identity and the New War for America's Classrooms. We're joined by the author, Mike Hixenbaugh. He is the co-founder of a podcast that won a Peabody. It was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize that dealt with the Southlake podcast. And Mike, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So They Came for the Schools. Who is they?
That's actually open for interpretation. One of the things I heard from parents in this affluent community of Southlake in North Texas and in other communities like it, whenever I ask people, why did you move here? What brought you to this community? Why did you move to the suburbs or to this town? I heard a variation of the same line. They came for the schools. They came to because that was the ticket to the American dream. You wanted to live in a good school district. But in addition to that, we've now in the years since then have heard for sure from some folks on the conservative right this belief that while conservatives weren't paying attention, the left came for the schools, that the left had quietly injected all of this progressive or woke ideology into the schools. I've even heard former Texas GOP Chairman Alan West has referred to has made comparisons to Hitler, Nazi Germany, that the left is coming for your children, they came for your schools, and you weren't paying attention. And now, obviously, we look across the country and there's a vast reactionary right-wing movement that is working to impose its worldview, a conservative Christian worldview in the schools. And so the title really alludes to the idea that this is a contested space. Schools have become a battleground, almost a proxy in a larger battle over what America is and what it stands for.
Our phone line is open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org. What do you think about them, they, whoever, coming for our schools, whoever it might be? Some people say it's George Soros coming for our schools. Other people think it's Steve Bannon coming for our schools. It depends on, I guess, where you sit. So Steve Bannon did put the schools in the target zone. What did he say? What did he want?
Yeah, in the spring of 2021, after the school board election in Southlake, Texas, became kind of a national model on the conservative right for how to band together and retake control of the school board to, at the time, they were saying, defeat critical race theory. We were seeing that fight to spreading to school board meetings across the country in the spring of 2021. In the midst of that, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump's former advisor, said on his War Room podcast, he just declared, the schools hold the key to pick the lock, or the path to save the nation runs through the school boards. And what he meant was this was an opportunity. This was a chance for the Republican Party and the kind of the MAGA movement to win back suburban white voters who may have been disaffected or repulsed by Donald Trump. And so when he said, the path to save the nation runs through the school boards, what he meant was we're gonna make this the center of our politics. We're gonna fight these culture wars, the schools, and as a result, we will win back those voters, not just to the school boards, but we'll win them back. We'll win back state houses. We'll win Congress. We'll win the presidency, and we'll save America by getting Donald Trump back in the White House.
This isn't the first time that schools have become ground zero for fighting over the future of the country. This happens almost, I would say it happens constantly, but, you know, when does it really bubble up to the level where we're really paying attention to it? And I'm thinking about, you know, during the Red Scare during the 1950s, people were accusing school teachers of being communist or communist sympathizers. There was a big issue about that in Texas at the time. And moving forward, this has been constant.
Yeah. One of the things I really wanted to do with the book was to place the current moment in a long historical context. So just as you said, from their very creation, our public schools in America have repeatedly become ground zero for our most divisive fights. And so you can kind of go back and walk it forward from, you know, the fights over evolution and how we talked about creation versus evolution in the 1920s and 30s to the battles over integration after Brown v. Board in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, the fights over forced busing. Those are all, you know, I think most people are familiar with those beats in history. But as you mentioned, this actually happens all the time, and it doesn't always rise to the level of, you know, the type of thing that ends up in a history textbook. And so one interesting period that I highlight in the book in the 1970s and 80s, you know, in the kind of the aftermath of the civil rights movement and women's empowerment and a growing awareness of gay rights in the country and the push for gay rights, there was this very intense campaign, and not at the level we're seeing today, but still a widespread campaign from the Christian right to defeat what they were calling secular humanism from public schools. And secular humanism, the actual meaning of that is it's the idea that you can have morality without subscribing to religion, and we can look to science for determining what's true and what's right and what's wrong. It's really just a philosophy that dates back to Enlightenment thinking. But the conservative right of that time, much like the conservative right today, has redefined critical race theory to become kind of a catch-all. Secular humanism became a catch-all for anything that showed up in a school textbook or library that offended a conservative Christian worldview. And so there was this widespread campaign in Texas, back then was an epicenter for this, to get secular humanism out of the schools. And that meant getting rid of books that depicted Jim Crow discrimination in the South. It meant not having Langston Hughes on the bookshelf. It meant always depicting women and families in traditional gender roles. So that was like almost a preview on a smaller scale of what we're seeing today.
So they basically have a new vocabulary, but the outcome that they want seems to always be the same. It doesn't matter what issues they determine, like, oh, this is critical. We need to return to basic Christo-American values. It's always the same. And we're going to talk more about this. We're going to dig in a little deeper on what happened at Carroll ISD. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this.
Support for TPR comes from La Fonda on Main, honoring the authentic cuisine of interior Mexico since 1932. Open for lunch, brunch, and dinner. More information at lafondaonmain.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, having a discussion with Mike Hixenbaugh. He is the author of the new book, They Came for the Schools, One Town's Fight Over Race and Identity, and the New War for America's Classroom. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Carroll ISD, this is the focus of the book at the in South Lake up in the DFW area, and you saw this as a example and also something that is indicative of something that's happening across the country. And I remember how in the fall of 2018, there was a big story, a blow up about a bunch of students chanting the N-word in a viral video. And that seemed to be like, we need to do something about that. Was that a trigger event?
Yeah, as you mentioned, yeah, in the fall of 2018, some white high school students at Terrell High School at a homecoming after party recorded themselves kind of doing a call and response, chanting the N-word. One of them shared it on Snapchat. Someone else posted it on Twitter. It went kind of viral in Texas and across the country. And it was really embarrassing for a school district that is renowned across Texas as, you know, an academic juggernaut, one of the best football programs in the state. Everyone, you know, they consider themselves an aspirational community. You wish you were wealthy enough to live in South Lake, right? And so this triggered a meeting just to hear community concerns. And, you know, the video was kind of like a spark. But the real impetus for the kind of racial reckoning in South Lake was what happened after. At a meeting after that, about a week after that video hit the internet, dozens of parents of Black students came forward sharing stories dating back two decades in some cases of just racist harassment and bullying and taunts, ugly jokes that their kids had kind of endured as kind of like just a cost of entry for a Black kid going to school in South Lake, Texas. And, you know, those things range from like, you know, just comments like, you're the, a white kid saying to her friend, you're the smartest Black girl I know, or to more extreme things like a kid hearing a joke like a quote unquote joke saying, how do you get a Black out of a tree? You cut the rope. And so, again, dozens of these stories in the school district, the school board, which was led by mostly conservative folks, Republican voters, decided they were going to do something. And this actually follows a pattern. I want to make sure I call this out. What happened in South Lake and the reason that I tell the story of this moment in our history through that town is it really represents what was happening all over the country. In the era of Donald Trump, a lot of these kind of issues that have been simmering under the surface in suburbs, in predominantly white but diversifying communities, these kinds of stories have happened for a long time. And Donald Trump's presidency kind of brought a lot of that to the forefront, where you were seeing, not in Terrell but other places, kids chanting build the wall at their Hispanic classmates or carving the N-word along with the phrase make America great again on a bathroom stall outside Detroit. All these examples. And across the country, as in South Lake, suburban school districts started to reckon with these things. They formed committees, and they hired DEI consultants, and they were in through the 2017 to 2020 timeframe, were working to come up with plans to try to address these issues that had gone unaddressed for a long time. And that's what happened at Carroll.
I'm going to go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255. We welcome your comments and questions. Let's go to Susan. Susan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I have this question. I am a Christian, and I don't believe, well, I know, that hatred and fear and discrimination are not Christian values because Jesus didn't do these things. So I was wondering if the author knew how Christians get to this point in his research. I just wondered that because I've read a lot and I can't get there.
Well, Susan, thank you for your call. And I think that's a great question. So Mike Hixenbaugh, sure. Were there traditional, like actual people who were, you know, real Christians saying this is not good?
Yeah. Nobody has openly defended these things happening. What has happened in South Lake is conservative Christians denying the severity of it, denying that it's as big of an issue as parents have made it out to be. But to get to her question, I think, and you know, there's religious and political scholars who are more expert in this than I am, but reading their work, and a great book recommendation, in addition to They Came for the Schools, a recent book by a journalist named Tim Alberta, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory, he writes about the evangelical Christian movement in America emerging less as a religion, as more of a cultural identity. And so I think that's where you might get to this, you know, this idea where your tribal, your position, and your views on this and are shaped by this kind of cultural identity that is entwined with Christianity, but also entwined with loyalty to the Republican Party or Donald Trump specifically, and to the idea that America, David Brockman, a religious scholar in North Texas, who's done a lot of work on this, used to refer to this as Christian Americanism, this idea that, you know, America is a Christian nation and America's good, in that America, you know, that kind of minimizes America's past because, you know, minimizes the role of racism and explicit racism and slavery in America's past, because the idea is that America is God's chosen vessel to bring light to the world. And so when you have that worldview and that perspective, I think, you know, you see this tendency to reject claims that America or your community is anything but that, that these students must be exaggerating. These parents are just exaggerating these stories. They're using this as a pretext to indoctrinate my kids with leftist ideology. And I think that's played out in lots of places.
We've seen throughout the history, when people are convinced that God is on their side, that they're capable of committing horrible atrocities. Let's go to another caller. We have Natalie on the phones. Natalie, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Madeleine. And by the way, in May 4th, we had this very battle. The Northeast Independent School District had 5 seats up for election on the board. And the Northeast Bexar County Democrats, the Bexar County Democratic Coordinated Campaign, and a whole slew of Republicans and independents fought, and we won every one of those seats for people who were for public education and not banning books and doing all those horrible things.
Natalie, thank you for that comment. That goes to another big point in the book, but Mike, your response.
Yeah, I was gonna call out Northeast ISD, because that in the San Antonio area has been kind of the forefront of this for a couple years now. You had the you know, in the news for pulling hundreds of books off the shelf kind of reactively. And yeah, the political action committees that formed there, really is a copy of what was happening in Southlake. I think there was a local PAC, maybe like Parents United for Freedom, or a conservative PAC that was really modeled after Southlake Families PAC in North Texas. And what played out this spring, your caller just alluded to, is something else that we're seeing across the country, which is this divide is not strictly a left versus right issue in these communities. What we're seeing is kind of almost like the MAGA wing of the Republican Party working to impose conservative Christian worldviews, anti-LGBTQ policies, you know, fighting critical race theory. And you've got them, but on the other side of that, I'm seeing more and more of these coalitions of progressives, liberals, Democrats, and Republicans who are concerned about what they see as an overreach. And you know, a lot of these folks they consider themselves Republicans, or they consider themselves conservatives at least, but they don't maybe support Donald Trump, or you know, that they were George Bush, Mitt Romney voters, but not Trump voters. And so, yeah, I'm seeing Northeast ISD is a great example of that. Round Rock, outside of Austin, had the same deal. You know, those districts have not swung in the direction of, well, you know, the Moms for Liberty type politics. They've fended off those takeovers.
Yeah, but then you look at something like Cypress Fairbanks, which is the third largest school district in Texas, Cy-Fair, some people call it ISD, and the conservatives managed to win that school board, and they're already implementing major cuts and doing all sorts of these. They're following the conservative playbook.
Yes, Cy-Fair, I pay a lot of attention to. I haven't written about it, but I pay attention because I used to live in Cypress outside of this is a sprawling suburban school district, huge, more than 100,000 students served in this district. And in a diversifying, used to be mostly white, it's a Houston suburb, so it's grown much more diverse. And it's been remarkable to see the transformation up there. Again, I lived in the community and just, I think maybe last week, we saw that school board do something I haven't actually seen many other places around the country. It really caught my attention. They voted to censor chapters from science textbooks because they saw the chapters that the school board felt were too divisive, and they dealt with things like climate change and diversity and human growth. Some of this I didn't even fully understand what the controversy was about, but that really jumped out because that is like a complete, like a direct callback to the 1920s of the Scopes Monkey Trial. Again, we're not going to, climate change is off the table. We can't have that in our classrooms because of, not because the science doesn't support it, but because it doesn't align with our political views.
And they're also openly talking about that they don't believe the school board members, they don't believe in the separation of church and state, and they want to bring Christian religion back into the classroom.
Yeah, that's a major theme in the book and in my reporting on this. There's been an evolution in how this fight has played out since this really kicked off in Southlake in 2021. And at the time, that was really focused on a blowback against the protest for racial justice and Black Lives Matter, and that was kind of what that discussion and debate and fight was about. But as this has evolved and conservatives nationally have worked to try to make schools this proxy for this bigger battle over what is America, some groups and interests who have spent decades on a project to basically erase the separation of church and state in America have seen this as an opportunity. The school fights are is a chance to do that. In particular, the opposition to transgender identities and transgender inclusion, and this very ugly claim that teachers are grooming kids, they're sexually grooming kids, they're trying to get them to change their genders, and that, you know, this really scary language is being put out there at the same time as these Christian groups on the Christian right are push transgender out, and we'll put Jesus in. So we're going to hang the Ten Commandments. We're going to try to do that in Texas in every classroom. We're going to get Christian chaplains in there. And David Barton, who's a well-known in Texas, I'm sure has argued that, like, we got to do these things, bring prayer back to the classroom, try to draw a lawsuit so that we can overturn church-state separation once and for all in America.
We're going to continue our discussion with Mike Hixenbaugh. He's the author of the new book, They Came for the Schools. Got a question or a comment? What are your concerns? What are your hopes? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues right after this.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. There's a lot going on with Texas public schools right now. public school funding. Public schools are having a shortfall because Governor Greg Abbott created the shortfall by refusing to increase school funding until the legislature would approve sending public money to private schools, Christian voucher schools predominantly. Also, we were hearing about reporting that the Houston ISD superintendent, who runs a has run some charter schools, he's sending Texas taxpayer dollars to bailout a charter school system in Colorado. And we're seeing all sorts of issues with what's happening in the classroom in regards to, you know, what is, you know, what is the, are we going to tolerate racial bullying? And that's what was the accusation at Carroll Independent School District this month, May 8th. The federal government has found evidence of civil rights violations of those students there. And that's according to the students' attorneys. So, Mike Hixenbaugh, you're writing about Carroll ISD. What about this new finding of civil rights violations?
Yeah, I mean, that's really crucial and kind of significant. As we discussed, you know, at Carroll ISD and outside of Fort Worth, there had been all these reports of racist harassment that students had come forward with, and anti-LGBTQ bullying. And the district's plan to address that, what was known as the Cultural Competence Action Plan, the new school board members who were elected in the beginning of 2021 got rid of that, scrapped that, and they in fact, you know, taken some explicit protections for LGBTQ students out of the non-discrimination statement and the code of conduct. But some local residents, activist groups, and students went to the federal government. They filed complaints in 2021 alleging that their four students, alleging that their civil rights were violated. They were discriminated against on the basis of race, gender, or sexual orientation, and that the school district didn't handle it properly or didn't take appropriate steps to prevent it. That sparked an initial round of investigations which eventually grew to eight investigations by the Office for Civil Rights at the Education Department in D.C. And last week, as you noted, some of the results from that came in. And in four of the open cases, the Education Department has notified Carroll ISD that they intend to negotiate a resolution to those cases. Which means that they have substantiated that those four students' civil rights were violated, and a couple of the students, they're not named anywhere in the complaint. It's all anonymized, but I know them from talking with them. A couple of them appear in the book, and so that really sets this key test where, you know, when the federal government comes in and says these students' civil rights have been violated. Often the remedy that the federal government proposes or imposes is mandatory diversity training for staff and sometimes for students. Changes to the non-discrimination statement to make really clear what's allowed and what's not, who's protected. Changes to the student code of conduct. Really all of the things that local Southlake voters have rejected repeatedly in landslide elections, the federal government might be coming in saying, you need to do this or your federal funding will be on the line.
So when your book is They Came for the Schools, those people might think that they is the Department of Education Civil Rights Division.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this has been framed by conservative leaders and activists and parents and Dana Lash, who's a NPR, I'm sorry, sorry, NPR. So, Dana Lash, who's a NRA, former NRA spokesperson and kind of far-right commentator. She lives in Southlake. And so all of these folks have alleged in various ways that the Biden administration is actually, this is retaliation. Some people have actually alleged that I'm coordinating this with the Department of Justice and NBC News to punish the voters of Southlake. That is not true. And so they're framing this as, yeah, the Biden administration is coming in to force these horrible things onto our kids after we said no.
So the kids that are being targeted, okay, we have kids who are Black or Latino, brown, but also kids who are Jewish are being targeted as well. And there was a controversy about the school was being told, the teachers were told to teach both sides of the Holocaust. And I believe your podcast leaked audio tape of the teachers being told to do that. And they were like, what? How do you teach both sides of the Holocaust? There is no both sides. And the administrator just said, just do it. Don't worry about it. Just do it. And but this is all coming simultaneously as we hear from Texas Governor Greg Abbott and others who are so alarmed that there's anti-Semitism happening in college campuses in Texas or, you know, different places. So maybe that's an entry point to say, let's talk about anti-Semitism and let's get rid of that.
Yeah, that situation you referenced was kind of an iconic moment in the fall of 2021, when the culture wars around school and critical race theory is what we were saying then, really was, you know, become very intense nationally. That incident when a Carroll ISD administrator was recorded telling teachers, if you have a book on the Holocaust in your classroom library, have one that shows an opposing perspective. It became like a symbol of, for folks on the left and people concerned about this, to say this is where we're leading. This shows that, you know, we've gone off the rails here. And that administrator was trying to comply with a new Texas law that Greg Abbott had pitched as an anti-CRT law, even though critical race theory wasn't mentioned in it. And that law said basically if you are teaching about a currently controversial subject, that you have to show all perspectives or both perspectives. And so that's where that came from. Just to close the loop on this, that we were able to report that story for NBC News in 2021 because six Carroll ISD teachers came to us and said, this is happening. They're basically blowing the whistle. Quoted them anonymously in written piece and interviewed two on NBC Nightly News with their faces and their voices masked to protect them because they feared retaliation. The book reveals that one of those teachers, who I can name now, Christina McGurk, a fourth grade teacher, suffered consequences for this. Someone in the community or somewhere, someone figured out how to unmask our digital distortion of her voice, and they were able to publicize and compare her voice in our interview with public comments. And the school board pulled her contract, and she ended up resigning, out of fear of being terminated. So in that example, this famous example where everyone agreed, like, no, you can't both sides of the Holocaust, what are we doing? The one person who suffered formal consequences was one of the teachers who tried to speak out about it.
I remember this was early in the Rick Perry, when he was governor, and there was this scandal of C-Scope in Texas. I don't know if you heard of C-Scope. It was a public education issue. They were going to do curricula changing, making it easier for teachers to teach things, particularly in smaller school districts that didn't have a lot of resources. And it became a huge scandal across the state of Texas because these right-wing activists were saying that it was a way to sneak teaching Sharia law into public school classrooms. It was a big deal, and became like, okay, we're going to ban C-Scope, even though no one really knew exactly what it was. And it just seems to me like this was, they just keep coming back to this type of issue. It seems to activate the base. We have some very loud, energetic, well-meaning, perhaps, individuals in the community who latch on to these issues, and they blow them out of proportion. But yet, and our politicians are happy to go along with this. I mean, no one really stands up and from the Republican Party and says, you're mistaken. This is just, we're just trying to teach our kids to be good citizens.
Yeah, I mean, these issues are kind of red meat, and it because the depiction of this kind of secret attempt to indoctrinate your kids through the schools kind of fits the narrative of, it answers maybe some folks have concerns about why are more Gen Z kids identifying as bisexual or some other LGBTQ identity? Why are those kids protesting against Israel on college campuses? And it provides a very easy answer, like, well, the this is part of a coordinated plan to change America by changing the children through the schools. The evidence isn't.
But there's really nothing to back it up. They have no hard evidence. Well, they can't really show that anyone stood in front of the classroom and said, you need to change your sexual identity. It's just, Anyway, we're going to take another break. And the conversation will continue with Mike Hixenbaugh, senior reporter at NBC News, author of the new book, They Came for the Schools. You can call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. They Came for the Schools, One Town's Fight Over Race and Identity, and the New War for America's Classroom. That's the book, and it's written by Mike Hixenbaugh. He's the co-creator of the South Lake podcast, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and also was recognized with a Peabody. Let's play a voicemail we got from a listener.
Hi, my name is Catherine. I'm an employee of one of the large school districts in San Antonio, and I'm interested in your topic today. I wanted to know specifically if you have any information about HB 1605 and the high-quality instructional materials. They've given us a rubric, TEA has given us a rubric that they're going to use to evaluate instructional materials, and the rubric is concerning in a lot of ways, and I'm curious about who designed the rubric. I know that teachers are going and a committee and educators are going to assess curriculum based on that rubric, but I'm interested in how the rubric was designed and under whose approval. Thank you very much. I hope you take my question.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Mike, that's kind of in the weeds. Can you address that at all?
I'll have to look into that. That specific bill is not, I'm not closely familiar with it. I'm vaguely familiar with it. So I'll be careful not to give your listeners false information. But I will say that there obviously has been a huge push through the Texas legislature and other Republican-controlled state legislatures to codify some of the stuff that conservative parents have been fighting for in places like South Lake. In Texas, I think you alluded to some of this earlier. Part of it is, this push for let's take a look at the curriculum. Let's put out some guidelines for what's allowed in libraries. A very controversial bill called the Reader Act that forces it's tied up in the courts right now, but would force publishers to rate books based on their sexual content. There's this fight over the social studies curriculum in Texas that got delayed. It's kind of an all-out, every aspect of education policy is getting touched by this in conservative-controlled red states. And who's behind it? I can't speak to that specific bill, but there's certainly a push by groups like the Texas Public Policy Foundation, the Heritage Foundation, other kind of conservative think tanks that have really pushed for bringing these perspectives to policy at the state level.
Also some billionaire donors funding these efforts as well. There's this thought that by many of these people that you're talking about, but by trying to take over these schools, it's a way to stop or even reverse social progress. but they're also being accused of trying to undermine the public's faith in public education entirely. We do know from Greg Abbott and others that their goal is to have zero property taxes. That would certainly have an impact on, like, well, how are we going to pay for our public schools? And your response might be, what public schools? Is this all tied together, you know, these efforts to, you know, have school vouchers, zero out public taxes, public property taxes, and attacking the public schools entirely? And can we see it as one big effort?
Yes and no. There's groups that are aligned with the conservative right in America, but they're not all pulling in the same direction on all of those issues you just ran through. There are certainly groups and individuals who their thing is school privatization. That's their mission. That's their objective. Their idea is that we can better educate our kids with the free market approach and privatization. And oh, by the way, that lets us send the public dollars to the private religious Christian schools that will educate our kids with that conservative Christian worldview that we feel like is missing from public schools. So there are certainly a not insignificant portion of the folks who are showing up at school board meetings who support that. But there's a lot of, I think, parents and grassroots type people, and even, you know, activists who in Texas who want to fight quote unquote woke ideology in the schools, but they're not on board with the voucher thing. And that's, I think, why part of the reason it's been a struggle to get that across the line for Greg Abbott in Texas. But yeah, he and others have been very transparent about how the culture war, quote unquote, in schools is leveraged to get school vouchers. And so on the governor's tour last year of visiting private Christian schools to make the case for vouchers, he visited exclusively private Christian Protestant schools. And at stop after stop, he said, he pitched vouchers as a way of stopping woke indoctrination. So like the public schools, even though they're run by Texas, even though, you know, the Republican controlled state, has been going around saying that to stop your kid from being indoctrinated with this woke ideology, we're going to do private school vouchers so you can send them to one of these private Christian schools. Those things are connected. It's just not a universal push from folks on that side of it.
Right. And from a politically strategic point of view, you know that teachers' organizations are a backbone of the Democratic Party. By wiping out public schools, you also do away with that nuisance if you're only interested in single-party rule.
Yeah.
So
a lot of Texas teachers are Republicans, too. And so this is where it gets interesting. Like, there's a lot of conservative educators who, they're not trying to indoctrinate your kids with woke ideology, but they're all, you know, they maybe vote Republican, but they're not on board. They're public school advocates. They're part of the union. They support that. And so it's not so easy just to slice this down, clear ideological lines all the time.
You used to be a newspaper reporter.
Yes.
So the fact that school papers are contracting, everything is changing with the ability of local news. It used to be that you could count on the local newspaper, local public radio station to cover this type of stuff. But, you know, under these tough times, it's hard for people to get the information if they go vote for the school board election, if they know who these people are.
Something I'm extremely concerned about. As you mentioned, I came up through newspapers. I used to work at the Houston Chronicle. Love Houston, love Texas, and loved working at the paper there. But before that, I worked at very small newspapers and, you know, like 12,000 circulation small town papers, where I was the one guy at the school board meeting or at the city council meeting. And the community writ large knew what happened at that meeting because I was there and I reported it, and we published it in the paper and our website. And from, as I've been doing this reporting for NBC News, from people every week I hear someone coming to me via my email saying, can you write about this thing that's happening at my school board? And I can't, right? I'm a national reporter. My goal with this book and with this reporting has been to help, if you live in Cyfair, you'll better understand what's happening in Cyfair, because I've gone deep in Southlake, and it's kind of a proxy for what you're experiencing, or wherever, Northeast ISD, wherever it is. I can't go around covering every school board in the country. There's 13,000 school districts. Like, it's not possible. But in each of those cases I've tried, I often will look, okay, well, who's the local news reporter who covers schools there? And I keep finding I don't know where to send people to try to get their story out, because there's not someone who just covers schools. Maybe it's not even a local paper in some of these places. And so it's hard to really inform people about what's happening.
So the elastic response, we had the rise of the Moms from Liberty. We've had these types of very conservative candidates winning control of the school boards, like at the Carroll ISD. Are we seeing the elastic response where people who are more progressive, people who do want inclusion taught in schools, that do want to end racial bullying in the hallway, are they responding?
I think for sure there's lots of evidence of that. I'll point back to, keep it local, Northeast ISD. That election was won by that coalition of progressive folks and concerned conservatives. And I just pulled up because I thought I saw this. Yeah, the conservative pack that had been, the far right pack that had been trying to take over the school district, told the San Antonio Report they saw us coming this time. And so I think that really perfectly encapsulates what's been happening in districts across the country in the last year. Is, for the first, the Moms for Liberty type groups had a jump start. They came out of the gate and they were very motivated, got organized, followed the Southlake playbook very well in many places to win control of school boards, even in left-leaning blue districts in some cases. But in the last year and a half, that swung. Groups like this on the left have gotten organized, and Moms for Liberty struck out quite a bit in some of these races, because now there's an organized opposition saying, no, we like our schools. We'd like everyone to feel welcome here. These things are good. Stay away.
Mike Hixon-Baugh is a senior reporter at NBC News, and he's the author of the new book, They Came for the Schools: One Town's Fight Over Race and Identity, and the New War for America's Classrooms. Mike, so good to have you on. Appreciate it.
I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.